It's The Unbelievable Truth with your host, David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. Tonight's panellists have already told me how excited they are to be here, so we already know they're excellent liars. Please welcome Tony Hawks, Fern Brady, Zoe Lyons and Mark Steele. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Mark Steele. Mark, your subject is the French, the people, language, history and culture of France. Off you go, Mark. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
The most important rule when learning the French language is that you never pronounce the last 7/8 of any word. For example, if a word is spelt B-E-A-L-L-O-T-I-M-E-N-E-C-E-U-X, the correct pronunciation is One example of how, in the French language, even the dullest objects are expressed romantically is that all their words for charts are named after cheeses. A pie chart is called le camembert, a bar chart is les bris, a flow chart is les plates de fromage, and a triangular diagram is le derrière-lit.
Tony.
I'm going for the penultimate one, the plate de fromage, as a flow chart.
Flow chart, les plates de fromage.
Yes.
No.
Oh.
And apparently it's a diagramme de flux.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah. I know that now.
Strangely, the only French phrases that aren't romantic are the ones to describe romantic acts. Kissing is described as rouler une pelle, to roll a shovel. To stroke someone's hair is chercher les asticots, to look for the maggots. And to make love in a cupboard is cacher les pupes, to hide the octopus. Cricket never took off in France because they always bowled one ball, then stopped for lunch for 1 hour and 3/4. Then they came back out again but went on strike against the poor quality of the wine during the drinks break, so every game ended in a draw. The English did plan a cricket tour of France, but it was cancelled due to the French Revolution, when the umpires decided that guillotining the wicketkeeper would be against the spirit of the game. In French schools, as well as maths, history and English, all children must be taught how to strike and riot. They take exams in which they're given extra marks for blocking a motorway with a burning canoe. French revolts in history include the 1936 national strike of clowns, who protested that their faces were making them too sad, the strike in 1907 of waiters who demanded the right to wear moustaches as they believed it enhanced the rudeness of their indifferent noise when a customer told them that they'd been waiting for 2 hours to be served, and in 2007 a steelworking plant went on strike because they wanted to be allowed to spend one shift a week discussing philosophy.
Tony.
One of those.
Absolutely.
I think I'm going to go for two of them.
Can I go for two?
Yeah, yeah. Two if they're buzzers. Both right, you get 2 points.
Yeah, I think
one's right, you break even. They're both wrong, you lose 2 points.
Okay, so
it's exciting.
It's exciting. I think the clown one is true, and I think the waiter one is true.
Well, let me tell you, the clown one isn't true, but the waiter one is true. So that was all a bit pointless. Yes, it's true. On April the 17th, 1907, at 6:30 p.m., Parisian waiters went on strike, demanding the right to have moustaches. At the time, moustaches were at the height of their popularity in the early 20th century. However, high-end Parisian restaurants enforced a clean-shaven policy to mimic domestic valets, servants forbidden facial hair as a class marker, ensuring diners felt like aristocrats served by inferiors. Hundreds of thousands of unionised waiters walked out, costing eateries up to 25,000 francs daily in lost revenue. By early May the same year, waiters across the city had won the right to grow moustaches. So, yeah. Not everything in history has been unfair.
On the French version of Match of the Day, as well as the football pundits, there's a resident philosopher who makes comments such as, "But what is a free kick? Can he kick truly be free. On the other hand, it is against French law to look enthusiastic if you work in a public building, or to carry live snails on a high-speed train without them having their own tickets, or to drink wine from a mug, or to make tea properly.
Zoe.
I'm going to say live snails on a train. I would have imagined they need to be euthanized in some sort of way, shape or form before they're allowed to travel on public transport.
So you think they need to be killed?
Oh, no, I'm saying... Well, I mean, that's where they're going, isn't it? They're not going snail racing, are they? They're going to be served up by waiters with moustaches, so it's...
Well, Mark was saying they merely needed tickets, which is different from being killed.
Oh, I totally misheard that.
Yeah.
I've travelled with my dog on a train in France and he needed a ticket, so...
So you're going with this?
Yeah, I am.
Well, you're right.
Oh, yes!
Yes. Under French law, it is technically illegal to carry live snails on a high-speed train without them having their own tickets. The rule comes from a regulation stating that small domesticated animals weighing less than 5 kilograms must travel as paying passengers. In 2008, a passenger on a TGV high-speed train was fined for transporting live snails without buying tickets for them. After the story became national news, the fine was eventually waived. But in principle, that is true.
The confidence of the French on public transport is true. I was in an area of the metro that's particularly notorious for thieves, and there's posters up everywhere, and I actually caught a bloke. I just turned around and there was a bloke with his hand in my coat pocket. And I said, what are you doing? Qu'est-ce que tu fais? And he just went, je suis un pickpocket.
And that's the end of Mark's lecture. And at the end of that round, Mark, you've managed to smuggle 3 truths past the rest of the panel, which are that in French, a pie chart is commonly called un camembert. The second truth is that in French, kissing is described as rouler une pelle, to roll a shovel. It's French slang for what we'd call French kissing, i.e. with tongues. And the third truth is that the English did plan a cricket tour of France, but it was cancelled due to the French Revolution. And that means, Mark, you've scored 3 points. When Napoleon died, the doctor who performed the autopsy secretly stole Napoleon's penis, or to use the technical French term, his Bonaparte. OK, we turn now to Fern Brady. Fern has baked cupcakes on the Great British Bake Off and written a book about her experiences being diagnosed with autism, which was described as raw and challenging to digest, as were her cupcakes. Fern, your subject is mushrooms, types of fungus with round, flat heads and short stems, sometimes eaten as vegetables. Off you go, Fern.
The world's largest mushroom is the size of a garden trampoline and can only be found in Nepal, whereas the world's smallest mushroom is roughly the size of a marble and could be found in the trousers of the guy sleeping in the Oval Office.
Tony.
I'm going for an absolutely enormous mushroom in Nepal. I think that's very plausible.
The garden trampoline-sized Nepalese mushroom?
Yeah.
No, Tony, you fool. No, the largest known mushroom is a single organism commonly called the honey mushroom, or Homongous fungus. It's located in Oregon's Blue Mountains and is considered the largest living organism on Earth by area and mass. It spans 2,385 acres, approximately 3.7 square miles, mostly underground, and weighs up to 35,000 tons.
The typical Paris breakfast consists of a mushroom omelette and is known in French as the breakfast of champignons. Genuine mushroom names include the Simpering Peasant, Frosty Casanova, the Bishop's Briefcase, the Underground Nipple Thriller, the Fetid Parachute, the Burping Duchess, Hairy Nuts Disco, and Winter's Anus.
Tony,
can I go for all of those?
You can if you like.
I could be minus...
I'd have to do a bit of maths.
Minus seven, wouldn't I, for this? No, I'm just going to go for whatever the third one was.
Right, the third one was...
The bishop's briefcase.
Yeah, the bishop's briefcase.
Yes. What do we think, audience? They're with me on the bishop's briefcase.
Sounds mushroomy, doesn't he? The bishop's briefcase.
No, I don't like the way you're going.
It'd be the sort of mushroom-shaped briefcase you'd imagine a bishop carrying. So it's good, isn't it? The concept of a mushroom so ancient and a briefcase so recent.
No, it's wrong.
No, it's not true. Uh-huh. Sorry. Mark.
The burping duchess. Duchesses have been around for as long as mushrooms.
They have. And mushrooms sort of expel spores in a burpy way. But it's not true. Zoe.
Fetid parachute.
Fetid parachute is right. Yes. The fetid parachute is a small, reddish-brown, inedible mushroom with a wrinkled cap that resembles a parachute.
In 2003, following the launch of TripAdvisor.com in the UK, the website received messages from over 3,000 people with questions about magic mushrooms. Mushrooms themselves, like other woodland plants, communicate via a special fungal network called the Wood Wide Web.
Zoe.
Yes, there's quite a lot of interest in psychedelics and magic mushrooms and where you can get them legally. And I would imagine if you were going to Amsterdam, just planning a trip maybe in November, just, you know, off the top of my head, and you were interested in partaking in such a thing, that you would perhaps ask TripAdvisor for advice on where would be good to go to get such a thing.
There is a website after... I was in America last year and I was in a state where they were legal, so this is fine to say. Yeah. And there's a website where if you're on a big mushroom trip, you can get in touch with them, kind of like the Samaritans, if you're having a bad trip, and they'll talk you down. But you can't use your hands when you're on that amount of mushrooms. I couldn't work out how to get to my laptop.
When you've legally, let's emphasise that, legally yes. taken psychedelic mushrooms...
I was in Oregon.
But you're too out of your face to be able to get in touch with the special local helpline.
They must have such an interesting job to the people that do get through to them.
This should be... Gardener's Question Time should be like this.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the dahlias are talking to me.
I'm afraid, Zoe, it is not true that TripAdvisor received messages from 3,000 people asking about magic mushrooms. So.
Incidentally, if you are listening to this right now while on mushrooms, can I just say the radio isn't even plugged in? This is your cat speaking to you. Get me more tuna. Now! A cat did talk to me when I was on mushrooms, by the way. It wasn't talking out of its catty mouth with its catty tongue. I'm not a dafty. It communicated the way all cats do when you're on mushrooms, by beaming golden light between our foreheads.
Tell me,
that's true.
At the end of the trip, I said, is it all right if I take you home to London? Because I've got two cats at home and they're nothing like you. They don't talk ever. And the cat said, I cannot do that, Fern, for my life is here in Oregon. David's just looking at me like he doesn't know what to say.
Security. Security.
I think this is a brilliant new direction for Radio 4. And now on Radio 4, Giles Brandreth talks about the first time he took crack.
Consuming Finland's Santa Claus mushroom conjures visions of Father Christmas. Eating the recently discovered hallucinogenic Richard Osman mushroom gives people the illusion they're 7 feet tall and can write cosy crime novels. And eating the Chinese little people mushroom makes people see little people running around on the furniture. So accurately was the phallic stinkhorn mushroom once thought to resemble an erect human penis that it was used in early British sex education classes, while older Victorian ladies would gather and secretly burn phallic stinkhorns lest they corrupt the morals of the youth.
Mark.
Yeah, I think there was the phallic mushroom. I think that existed.
You're absolutely right. And more than that, The phallic stink-horn mushroom, whose Latin name is Phallus impudicus, or the shameless phallus, and whose folk names include dead man's cock. It was considered so mortifying in its appearance that older ladies would often burn them in secret to avoid corrupting the morals of the maids. Some Victorian ladies were even known to wake early and destroy any stinkhorns that appeared on their property before guests took their morning walks. So they get out of the... Quick, let's get out there and gather all the cocks so the guests don't see them. Thank you, Fern. And at the end of that round, Fern, you've managed to smuggle three truths past the rest of the panel, which are, there was another real mushroom name that you missed, which is the Hairy Nuts Disco. The Hairy Nuts Disco mushroom is a tiny mushroom that grows on the fallen, hairy, decaying husks of sweet chestnuts. The second truth is that mushrooms, like other woodland plants, communicate via a special fungal network called the Wood Wide Web. Beneath every forest and wood, there's a complex underground web of roots that are linked together by thread-like structures produced by mushrooms and other fungi, which help connect the trees and plants in a subterranean social network that's referred to by researchers as the Wood Wide Web. This underground network allows for the exchange of resources and information, challenging the long-held view of trees as solitary figures competing for survival. And the third truth is that consuming the Chinese little people mushroom makes people see tiny elf-like figures marching under doors, crawling up walls and clinging to furniture. The little people mushroom is sold in markets and appears on restaurant menus. You have to cook it thoroughly, though, otherwise the hallucinations will set in. Scientists have no idea why. And that means, Fern, you've scored 3 points. Next up is Zoe Lyons. Zoe met her wife while on holiday on the Greek Isle of Lesbos. That's according to the latest edition of Gay Cliché Weekly. Zoe, your subject is bears. Large, heavily built mammals with thick fur, short tails and sharp claws that are found across the northern hemisphere. Off you go, Zoe.
Polar bears have an insatiable appetite for bacon and Guinness, probably because polar bears are actually Irish. And this goes some way to explain why Singapore Zoo had two green polar bears who loved the sound of the fiddle and often boasted about how quickly they could get through European passport control. Pandas are widely regarded as the con artist of the bear world. They fake pregnancies to get better housing and even pretend to have a limp to avoid having to walk in the snow and then fraudulently acquire blue badge parking. It's thought that an American bear PR company has spread the rumour that it's best to play dead if attacked by a bear in the wild, when in fact it can often make the bear's task a lot easier. One person who knows all too well about the dangers of bear attacks is Scooter Bywater, who has been mauled by bears an incredible 32 times, despite wearing protective bear bells designed to scare away the bears.
Mark.
Yes, he's been mauled by a bear 32 times.
No. No, he hasn't. Doesn't exist. That's the problem with Scooter Bywater. No,
what a
such
bastard.
Person. Yeah. You'd have to ask the question, what is it about that guy?
Well, I'll tell you. Confused as to why this kept happening to him, it transpired that a mischievous friend had put a post-it note on his back that just read, "Eat me." Fairbanks, Alaska is home to an infamous bear nicknamed Jingle, so-called because of the noise he makes when running, caused by the sheer number of protective bear bells he has consumed in his lifetime.
Tony.
He did eat lots of people with bells, and he was called Jingle.
Like the crocodile in Peter Pan that went tick-tock.
I don't like the way this is going.
No, I'm afraid it's not true. Sorry, Tony.
The notoriously body-conscious grizzly bear is obsessed with wellness and will ditch red meat for months on end and instead feed almost entirely on moths to get that all-important shredded abs on a lighter diet. They've also been observed using logs and rocks like gym equipment, and unlike human gym-goers, they see some impressive results as they don't often spend hours just sitting on a gym rock scrolling through their phone.
Tony.
This one I am absolutely certain of.
Yes, that's good.
No question about it. They do use logs like they're in a gym.
No. No, I was... No. So I bought into your certainty. And I was expecting something to come out of your mouth that was true. Thank you, Zoe. Now, at the end of that round, Zoe, you've managed to smuggle 5 true. Past the rest of the panel. Blimey. I mean, that's very impressive. A lot of truths about bears coming up. Number one, polar bears are actually Irish. All polar bears are Irish and descended from brown bears that lived in Ireland over 10,000 years ago during the last ice age. The second truth is that Singapore Zoo had 2 green polar bears due to algae caused by Singapore's warm and humid climate. The bears were sprayed over several weeks with a hydrogen peroxide solution to restore their natural colour. The third truth is that pandas have been known to fake pregnancies to get better housing. In 2014, a female giant panda called Ahin at a Chinese panda breeding research centre in Chengdu pretended to be pregnant to get her own room and more buns. The fourth truth is that if attacked by a bear, playing dead can make their task a lot easier. If you're attacked by a brown or grizzly bear, it is recommended that you play dead, lying flat on your stomach with your hands clasped behind your neck, spreading your legs to make it harder for the bear to turn you over. In contrast, if you are attacked by a black bear, you should not play dead. Instead, you should try to escape to a secure place such as a car or building. Not up a tree, they can climb trees. Or, if escape is not possible, try fighting back. I mean, by that point, you might as well. Just try fighting back, concentrating your kicks and blows on the bear's face and muzzle. So hopefully that's useful information the show can give, along with what to do if you're out of your face on mushrooms. And the fifth truth is that grizzly bears can feed almost entirely on moths. As other food sources become scarce, grizzlies climb peaks as high as 13,000 feet to eat thousands of moths each day. The moths are so rich in energy that some biologists call them bear butter. A single bear can eat up to 40,000 moths a day. And that means, Zoe, you've scored 5 points. It's now the turn of Tony Hawks. Your subject, Tony, is words, single units of language that have meaning and can be spoken or written. Off you go, Tony.
In 2015, the Collins Dictionary added the words whatevs, chillax, babes and vajazzle and changed its name to the Gemma Collins Dictionary.
Zoe.
2015. I'm thinking that was the year of the chillax, wasn't it? And the vajazzle, as I remember now. Didn't suit me. terribly itchy on corduroy. I'm going to say... I'm going to say they were added in 2015.
They were not.
Oh!
In 2019, the Oxford English Dictionary included the words chillax and whatevs.
Until Pliny the Elder provided his famous naming of the anatomical parts, the ancient Roman word penis actually meant tail, as in the familiar Roman phrase, canis te videri gaudiet penem quatit, or the dog is pleased to see you, he's wagging his penis.
Zoe.
Now, not normally my area of expertise, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that penis actually does mean tail.
You're absolutely right.
There you go. Yeah.
The ancient Roman word for penis actually meant tail. It wasn't until Cicero's time that he noted that the once innocuous word penis, meaning tail, had become a vulgar word for the male member. The polite Latin names for the penis were veretrum or membrum virile.
Interestingly, our word pencil comes from the Latin penicillus, meaning small penis, or Bernie Eccleston. Every English county has its own word to describe a noisy fart. In Sussex, it's a pengle. In Norfolk, a pingle. And in Durham, a prangle.
Mark.
Prangle.
No. No, there's no such word as prangle.
Did you say a pringle?
A pingle was
oh,
in Norfolk.
Oh, a pingle, not a pringle.
No.
Which is
no.
a shame, because once you pop, you can't stop, which would make sense.
No.
And fizzling was the old word for farting silently. The meaning of all words changes over time. For example, a mugger was a maker of mugs. A racketeer was a maker of sports equipment. A sorcerer was a maker of gravy. A spokesperson was a maker of bicycle wheels. And an undertaker was a thief of underpants.
Zoe.
Muggers made mugs.
You've hit the jackpot. Yes, for around 100 years, the word mugger simply meant someone who sold mugs or other earthenware.
In 2007, the Catholic Herald sacked their crossword setter after complaints about the opening clue to their Easter Day crossword. List of things you need to crucify someone. One, a cross. In 17th century Britain, it became popular to squish words together. For example, a squire who was also a bishop became a squishup. A goldsmith who was also a fishmonger became a goldfishmonger. And a parson who was also a sex worker became a prostitute. Or the Archbishop of Canterbury, whichever happened first.
Thank you, Tony. And at the end of that round, Tony, you've managed to smuggle three truths past the rest of the panel, which are that the word pencil comes from the Latin penicillus, meaning small penis. The second truth is that fizzling was the old word for farting silently. Fizzling or to fizzle. And the third truth is that a squire, who was also a bishop, was called a squishup. And that means, Tony, you've scored 3 points. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with minus 4 points, it's Tony Hawkes. In third place, with minus 1 point, it's Mark Steele. And in joint first place, with an unassailable 3 points each, it's this week's winners, Zoe Lyons and Fern Brady. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Tim Hawkes, Zoe Lyons, Mark Steele and Fern Brady. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.
David Mitchell and panel will be back.